This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, how the heck are you? It's Tuesday, and we are free and clear of eclipse talk. Although you got a better look at it than I did yesterday, because we were still here at One Bills Drive, me and our producer, Jay Harris, along with a few others, and we got nothing. Nothing. I mean, yes, it got dark, it got colder, but we couldn't see the sun, the moon, to save our lives.
I got a picture of the last sliver and then the first sliver as it passed, and also where I was, there was a big wide open space, and you could see the shadow of totality coming across. Mm. It was fast. And
Hurtling across the Earth's surface.
Yeah, it was quite the moment. Very cool. Very cool experience. And, of course, then an hour after the eclipse was gone, the sky was crystal clear.
Yeah, I know. If the path of totality was here at 4:15, everyone would have gotten a magnificent look at it.
But it was still an absolutely unbelievable experience, a lot of fun. And like I said, even if it was cloudy, it was still a good reason to get together with friends.
I suppose it was most rewarding. I guess the reward for not getting to see anything yesterday is today's weather. It's like 75 here in Buffalo.
Beauty.
Which, you know, you want to believe spring has sprung, but at the same time, you're like, well, hold the phone.
You've been
not going to get duped again.
Big work day for me, though. When I get home, I got stuff I got to do outside, though.
This is my that's
chance.
Good.
This is my chance. You know,
I actually started some backyard work yesterday. I'm moving some plants around because they're too big for where they currently are. They're infringing on my lawn, so I have to find them to relocate them to open spaces.
I'm not going to go so. I'm not going to make the same mistake again because I had to put the plow back on.
Yeah, so I'm not taking that off for shoveling.
I'm not taking that off. But I did take down the netting around the landscape. You know, the deer netting.
Your deer barrier.
That's, you know. So I'm thinking
that's
this
more to stop deer than to prevent snow drifts.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Because that's why they call them a snow fence usually.
Well, it's not a snow fence. It's that black netting stuff.
Oh, it's not the netting.
It's not the orange stuff.
Okay.
That is snow fence. I'm thinking, and I'm gonna, you can call me crazy. I think this weekend's gonna be that weekend where we kind of feel like we turn the corner.
Well, it's supposed to pour all weekend.
Well, okay, maybe not.
Let's hold on that.
Hold on a minute.
You know when I finally feel like we're out of it?
What?
When we get through draft weekend. Because it's usually the last weekend in April. And once we come out of there, I was like, okay, maybe some cool days. But for the most part, we're living in the upper 50s, lower 60s on average.
Right.
And we may even get some nice days above that. And then once we get past Mother's Day, we're usually okay. Usually.
My line of demarcation is April 15th, tax day. That's where
I don't know if that holds as reliably as
it does.
Draft weekend.
By that time, locally, we are usually the pins are in and we're walking anytime.
Oh, well, you're talking about strictly playing golf. Yeah.
But that's also the weather. And then also too, and if it's pouring this weekend, it won't count like that. So it'll be the next weekend or whenever. But Buffalo people get this. Your favorite season of the year is always the next one. You know?
Well, I don't look forward to winter.
Well, I kind of do. I like the first snowfall, I like it all. But for most of us, we like the four hard season. Now, springtime, you can always make the case it's the worst of the four for most Buffalonians.
I don't know if spring exists here, really.
Right. But I think for most of us, the change in seasons is kind of I think it's kind of a little perk. I count it as a perk.
Okay.
Because it's always that, like, here we go. Particularly in the summer and the fall. Oh, my gosh, really? You know, it's just awesome. Yeah. So
summer's it for me.
I think for most of us, we have that spot in our heart where, and for me, it's always this. There's that weekend, and I said it might be this weekend until you said it was going to rain, but there's that weekend when, forget about the flowers and the trees bloom, the people bloom. It's gone.
Yeah. Everyone that's been a hermit all winter finally comes outside.
It's gone for good.
Rub their eyes.
Everybody's in their yard. You drive through your neighborhood, and it's like, oh, look at that. There's all these people out. Yeah, it's that kind of weekend.
Isn't it crazy?
That's the best.
I've always thought about this. It's remarkable to me how much Western New Yorkers toil in their yards, you know, to make their yards look nice for what amounts to a span of 3.5 months. And then we go through the paces of
5 months,
covering everything up, you know, making sure it's protected for the winter, only to do it all over again. And it befuddles me that, I mean, I guess it's just who we are. We're just used to kind of that whole routine. It's funny because my son once told me, Dad, I'm going to be living where I'm not, because he used to have to help me bring the patio furniture out and then pack it up in the shed every week. He's like, I'm living somewhere where I can just leave it out all year round.
I'll say that. And I don't want to be, philosophical guy and make, smile in the face of adversity. But I most people say, well, that's just life. You know, you got stuff you got to do.
Yeah.
For me, though, hey, it's living. We got stuff we're doing.
Right.
I'm getting ready for the spring. I'm getting ready for the summer. I'm getting ready for the fall. I'm battening down the hatches for winter. I'm opening things back up for the spring. That's not life. That's living, man. Let's go. Every year, let's go. I got stuff I do.
You are a far more positive
person. I gotta go. I got stuff to do this season. You know, this summer, this winter, the fall, everything. I got stuff I gotta do. That's not life. That's living. Yeah. Let's go.
I do love summer, so it can't get here soon enough.
Yeah, so. I mean, I love the change of the seasons, and it's the best, man. Because there's always something here in Buffalo, especially because of the four ultra exaggerated seasons we get. We get the deepest, darkest winter, the most glorious summers, and the best in-betweens, although it's hit and miss in the spring, like we always
spring
say.
Spring is kind of,
The fall is elite.
Yes, I will give you that.
So, you got. It's just great to look. We here in Buffalo, we look forward to that. Let's go. And it's a cycle.
Got
to
sign you up with the Chamber of Commerce
because we do so many vastly different stuff. Like you, on a boat, feet up, drinking a beer, lying in the water. Right.
If I can.
Right. And then in the winter, it's like we're downhill in it. Let's go. We're shushing.
Shushing.
On the, we're in the warming hut in front of the fire with a toddy, right? And we all do it over the top, all of it, So it's, I'm just all about it. I'm all about it.
We'll sign you up with the Chamber of Commerce. We got to get you employed.
Yes, and the eclipse has triggered the entire conversation.
There you go.
Passage of time. We're infinitely small in this huge universe.
That's right. We are closing in on off-season conditioning program start day.
And
Steve and I, in our travels through the building, whether we're running upstairs to get coffee or what have you, have noticed a little bit more traffic, shall we say, in the hallways. Some players are trickling back in, getting a head start on, what will be the off-season conditioning workouts, which start April 15th. Today is the 9th, so less than a week away.
Bunch of guys showed up today.
Yep. Saw Terrell Bernard in there. Saw a few other players.
Rousseau's in there.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know who, we can't tell you who this guy was because we really haven't been confirmed or anything. So Brandon and I are walking through, and they're walking through one of these guys on their 30. We think it's
that's our suspicion.
On his top 30 visit.
Mm-hmm.
We think it was. Brownie is over at his desk going through headshots of every college player trying to figure out who this joker is.
I got him.
9 feet tall, huge. So he's obviously an offensive defensive lineman, but Brownie's going through all the I think it's this guy. And we can't tell you because we don't really know for sure if that's the guy.
I don't think we should say anything.
So we can't say anything about who it is because we don't know. We honestly do not know. But the dude stood out. I mean, he blocked out the sun. So
I had to move over in the hallway when he walked by.
So Brownie puts his Sherlock Holmes hat on and goes in. He's going through headshots.
I was curious.
Trying to figure out who this guy was. I was laughing. Yeah. We still don't know. I think we have a good idea. We think we know, but we don't.
It's kind of fun to do
that. Oh, my gosh. It's unbelievable.
It's a little busier in here, and some of the players are trickling back in as the off-season conditioning program will start next week. And obviously not mandatory, but the vast majority of players have been in here for the off-season conditioning program, with few exceptions. And I think it kind of speaks to the quality of person that the players typically target, whether it's to sign as a free agent or to draft. They're grinders. They like putting the work in. That's the kind of people that Sean McDermott likes to have on his roster, committed to the daily growth mindset. So we're expecting heavy participation when the off-season conditioning program gets started in earnest next week. Other than that, mock drafts are flying around, and we can talk about those if you want. But our topic of discussion today deals with this year's draft for the Bills as a whole, in its totality. Our topic of discussion for you today: why do you think this will be the most important Bills draft since 2018? I think we can all agree that the 2018 draft in the Bean McDermott era proved to be the most important draft of their respective tenure. I think you can make the argument that this year's draft is the most important since that one, that obviously landed Josh Allen, Tremaine Edmonds, and some other talent for building blocks, cornerstones of the roster that turned into a perennial playoff contender. So state your case now. Why do you think this will be the most important Bills draft since 2018? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 is the number to get on board. We got open lines for you there.
Kind of a double-edged sword, this question, too. You think about it, one of the reasons that the 18 draft was so hugely important is because they got it right at the top. I mean, two all-pro guys.
Yeah, Josh, but I think it was evident, Tremaine, as nice a season as Tyrod Taylor put together in helping the team end the playoff drought, he had extreme limitations to his game that I think everybody knew, like, hey, that's all great, you know, helped us get to the playoffs, but there are limitations there, and he's not really a guy that's going to get you over the top.
Yeah, but my point is this, though. I mean, if they would have totally bungled the 2018 draft, there would have been a more important draft coming up because they'd have had to get that right. I think the 2018 draft is obviously the most important in certainly recent memory, was because they got it right. And that's what they've built all the rest of this on. And now this year here, where they're coming in, they're kind of refurbishing the roster majorly for the first time since then. Mm-hmm. When McDermott was kind of building it, he came in and he actually added by subtracting good players and trading at the right before his first season, then getting to the playoffs that first year. I mean, obviously, when you take over as new head coach, everything's a reset. And they got all of that stuff exactly right. And I think everything since then has been laid on that foundation. But this draft, you're putting up some stuff, some subflooring at least, right? I mean, you're refurbishing some stuff that needed it.
We heard Brandon Bean say as early as late January that they really need to hit on this draft with their picks. He knew what was coming with the salary cap casualties, the veteran departures, which most recently included Stephon Diggs. So that's why, you know, to your point, I think we've seen the largest off-season roster overhaul in the Bean McDermott era, maybe short of the year where, after 2018, they added four new starting offensive linemen for the 2019 season and then go to the playoffs after missing them in 2018. So there is a lot that has gone out the door. Obviously, they've replenished the roster, bringing some new people in. But as we said a couple of weeks ago on the show, a lot of the household names that Bills fans had become accustomed to seeing year after year after year after year are not on this roster anymore, and those are sizable voids to fill, both from a playing perspective and a leadership perspective. So I think it is in large part why Brandon Bean has said more than once this offseason, we've really got to hit on this draft.
Yeah, and I don't want to take the analogy too far, but those foundational pieces they got in 2018, now they're replacing some of this foundation that they got, like Mike Hyde and Poyer.
Tre'Davious White.
Tremaine was gone last year. Foundational pieces. Mitch Morris really was the first big free agent they signed, right? I mean, he had like a $10 million contract. He was Pat Mahomes' center, his MVP season, his first out-of-the-box season. And his second year, but Bill signed him the next year. So all of those pieces are now having to be replaced. And, man, oh, man, you think back about the guys that made this McDermott era so far, what it was, those are the foundational pieces. I mean, Josh, the last one standing. Milano. Taron, maybe.
Deion Dawkins. This is the 2017 draft.
Deion Dawkins still hanging around. I mean, and there's a lot of guys that they have drafted on the team, but, you know, you're talking about guys like Baylen Spector, you know, and Christian Benford, Shakir, Bernard, Cook, and Elam. Those guys have only been here a couple of years.
Yeah, Rousseau.
Rousseau now is starting to get to that point, right? He's starting to get to that level. A.J. Epenesa signed his second contract. But you get past those guys. Ed Oliver is there, certainly. But, these guys that they said goodbye to this year, man, that's like – it was like the heart and soul, right? I mean, it's a lot of the intangibles. A lot of the guys who – the team spoke to us, the Bills fans. They spoke to all of us. This was the voice they used. All these guys, now they're gone. It's going to be a completely new voice this year. It'll be Josh and
Deion.
Matt Milano doesn't say anything to anybody. I mean, you know, it's going to be a new voice, I guess.
Probably Terrell Bernard.
It's really going to be a new voice for this team. And I think that's typified by this draft.
Why do you think this will be the most important Bills draft since 2018? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, the number to get on board. Got open lines for you there. Also, if you can't call, you can hit us up on the tweet sheet, @1BillsLive. Just tell us why. What is it that makes you feel like the Bills really got to nail this draft front to back? You can let us know at 803-0550. We should also mention, coming up in the second hour of the show, more draft talk, as we'll be joined by ESPN NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed, who is going to have a 7-round mock released the Monday before draft day, but his final draft rankings are also going to be released a week from tomorrow on ESPN.com. He also has a best team fit for the Bills and their pick at 28. So you can see what that is in the second hour of the show when he joins us in the 2 o'clock hour. But in the meantime, we will go to the phones and we'll lead off with Mark in West Seneca today. What do you got for us, Mark? You're on 1 Bills Live.
Hey, guys. Hey, I'd never ever get on this early. Usually I'm at the end of the day. But the reason I'm calling today is I'm trying to play a little bit of detective about Brandon Bean. I know there was a lot of conversation yesterday about packaging picks, moving up, and some crazy talk all the way to number 4, number 5, number 6, which I think is totally out of the question. But you just alluded to the fact that Brandon had, as early as April said, talked about how we have to hit on this year's draft. That's not the kind of talk that lends itself to me anyway to Brandon thinking he's going to take picks, especially high picks, and move up the board. I can see him taking 28 and putting a 5th, a 6th, whatever, maybe even one of the 4s this year, to move up 3 places, 4 places. But I think he's thinking we need to hold on to, you got a 1, a 2, 2 4s this year, you got a 1 and 2 2s next year. Those are valuable picks. If you hit on 75% of those, which you hopefully do, being as high as they are, you're rebuilding your team with youth and talent. So I just don't see Brandon making that move with the comments he's made about giving up any of those assets. I think he really wants to make those picks. And I also think, and maybe you make the argument, moving up the board wasn't as urgent as it is now because Diggs is gone and we need to get a number one. But I still don't think he makes that move if he doesn't believe he's got enough talent to compensate for making that move with what's in the draft and what would probably be available to him at 28 if he just sits tight or moves up a couple of spaces. So I'm really not expecting him to make any kind of crazy drastic move. Would be exciting, but I don't want to lose any of those assets. So that's my point, guys. Have a great day.
All right, yep, thanks, Mark.
I'll say this. You're right. You you want to take as many swings as you can. There's going to be some guys down in the draft that are going to emerge as being underdrafted, like Steph Diggs. Like those guys like that. You're going to get guys who are drafted in this draft in the middle to late rounds who are going to emerge as being these really good players that you just didn't know. You couldn't tell. There are going to be in there. And I get it too, but sooner or later, you got to pick guys with those picks. I mean, they turn into guys. And that's what you're talking. You've got to find a guy. And the further down this draft you go, the more people agree that that is not the guy. Certainly you can come out with a Steph Diggs or a Khalil Shakir in the fifth round, okay. But more often than not, it's going to be a guy like Juwan Johnson or some of the other guys that were down there, Adolphus Washington, Cardale Jones, Colby Listenby, all these guys that are later in the Bills have taken in the draft that are just, not so much. It's a roll of the dice. It's luck when you get more so than evaluation when you get down there that deep in the draft.
Bills have done pretty good under Bean and his personnel department finding late round talent. I mean, whether it's Dane Jackson, a seventh round pick, whether it's Alex Austin, who's playing for the Patriots now because the Bills couldn't keep him on their roster last year, Jack Anderson, another seventh round pick, who I believe is currently with the Colts as an offensive lineman, and got plucked off their practice squad because they couldn't put him on the active roster. Bills have done pretty good during the Bean administration in nailing down late-round draft choices that are good enough to be on NFL rosters and play on Sundays. So I don't know if I would just completely dismiss it out of hand. I get your point.
I get it, too. If you're going to bat 300, bat 300 taking 1,000 swings, not 10.
And I said this on the show the other day. I tend to agree with Mark. I am not anticipating a giant move up the board because I think Brandon Bean covets his high-round draft choices too much. Now, that's not to say he wouldn't part with one of those twos next year to get up the board without sacrificing the one that he has this year, which I know he would probably prefer to use and not part with. You have an extra one next year. If you feel strong enough about a certain player, well, then make the move and part with the pick. But as I said on the show the other day, when he did it in a two-step process with two trades to move up to pick 7 to take Josh Allen, he did not give up a future first-round pick then to get a franchise quarterback.
Right, I'll say this.
I don't know if he's doing it for a number one receiver, if he's not going to do it for a franchise signal caller. I could be wrong.
Yeah, the permutations of this trade talk are endless. But I could see this if they get the 28th pick, they get the 60th pick, and then, as we've talked about a ton, they don't pick again until way down in, 60, and then it's like 128. Yeah, they don't have a third, and they go all the way down to 128. So, but I could say this. So you got two twos next year. Like you said, I don't see a major move, but you could take one of those twos next year and cap it with one of the late round picks this year, or
into the teens.
And get into the teens, or later on in this draft, jump from 204 and get into the second round where you don't have a pick. They could replace their third round pick.
Oh, get in the third round.
So they could get, or you could
I could see them doing that.
If a team has a couple of draft picks, you say, listen, we'll give you next year's number two, or one of our number twos next year for two threes this year. Or for a 3 and a 2 or whatever.
I mean, 8 of their 10
a 3 and a 4 this year.
4 or later. So.
Right. So
that's where most of their capital
they could
resides.
Move up slightly. I would anticipate that because then you'd get an extra pick and you'd get a third rounder this year that you don't have.
Yeah.
So all that stuff is in there. But you got to have a partner.
And I would say the most important thing about their plan in terms of how they're going to approach the draft is what their board says about the wide receiver class. If they only have 5 first round grades in the receiver class as a whole, they're moving up. They're probably moving up. If they have 8 receivers with a first round grade, granted, they're all going to vary. You know, they might be 1.1, 1.2, 1.4, 5, etc. If they have 8 receivers with a first round grade, they're not going anywhere. They're going to sit, watch the board fall, and then if there's a run, maybe they move. Otherwise, they may just sit tight. If they got eight guys with first-round grades and they're picking 28, they're going to be pretty happy.
I don't know why I think this. I just think it's the most likely thing because it's kind of the easiest to see getting done, and that's like a five-place move where you go from 28-23 or 28-22, whatever. It could be 22-23 because it's Philly, Minnesota, out-of-conference teams. You know what I'm saying? Miami's not going to trade with Buffalo 28-21. You know, go back. Bills aren't going to give the Miami Dolphins any aid and comfort. So it'll be Philly or Minnesota, something like that. Maybe even the Rams at 19. I don't know, though. That's a big jump. It's a big jump. Yeah. It's expensive. So I think the most likely thing is to jump, you know, from 28 into the mid-20s from, you know, Philly, Minnesota, Dallas, 22, 23, 24. That's the most likely scenario because then they'll be assured of, you know, not having one of these other teams clip the guy they want, Green Bay or Tampa Bay or Arizona clipping one of the guys they want at that spot. So if their guy falls that far, that's what I would anticipate as being the most likely. But I can't tell you why I think that except that we see it so much from this group. You know, they last year they flip-flopped like two picks.
They went up one spot.
They went up one spot. So, you know, there you have it. That's why I think it's more likely. I don't know that that's front burner.
Let's get back to the phones and to George in Fort Erie. What's up, George?
Hey, guys. You know, it's a rock and a hard place. I agree with a lot of what you say, but I disagree with a lot. You seem to want to defend him on his later round picks, but pretty much the first round picks have been a whiff for me.
Which ones don't you like?
I don't like Russo. I don't like, he's going to be okay, but shouldn't you get a slam dunk there?
Well, when you're picking 30, it's a little different. If you're picking in the top 10 or 12, yeah, I would agree with you. You're picking 30 and you get a proven starter who's a capable player for you. I don't think that's a whiff. I mean, if the guy can't make the roster, yeah, that's a whiff.
Yeah. Well, that's why I can't argue with you because, number one, let me just ask you this, if this is a fair question. Can't we do what the Rams did?
Trade all our picks?
Steve, can we do that?
Well, it's harder now because they're cap-strapped. They're tight against the cap. So trading for veteran players and adding salary to your books really isn't feasible. They need cheap labor.
What about that wide receiver? They want to unload
the Rams receiver.
Anyhow, I don't want to wait till.
Who are you talking about? Which team's receiver?
Maybe it's not the Rams. I'm sorry. I apologize.
You mean T. Higgins or somebody like that?
Oh, T. Higgins or Brandon Ayuk?
No. I know. Yeah, Ayuk.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't rule it out. It's a possibility, but again, because they're so tight on the cap, they would have to get supremely creative with Brandon Ayuk on a new contract. That's why he's going to get moved. They can't afford to pay him, Deebo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, Nick Bosa. I mean, they have superstars in their roster. They can't pay another because they're too tight on the cap. And that's on a rookie contract with their quarterback, Brock Purdy.
Right.
So, that's the only reason they might move him. So you have to know if you're going to try to acquire him, he's going to want big money, like comparable to Diggs money in all likelihood, or maybe slightly less than that. So taking on that kind of a contract, as much as it would help you on the field, fiscally, it's likely to be supremely difficult. Not saying you can't do it, but you got to get supremely creative because you got to pay him next to nothing this year and promise him roster bonuses and other stuff and option bonuses next year when you have more cap room.
One of the other things about this.
Not to mention you're parting with stuff too.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about this, and he said the first round, the only first round pick that has been a huge question mark has been Kyrie Elam. And
jury's still out there though.
Brownie and I both feel like Elam, they're not done with him.
He hasn't played enough to know if he can or can't play.
And I don't think it – yeah. So there – I just think Kyrie Elam is going to prove some doubters wrong, I think, this season. I think a fresh coaching staff and a refurbishment of the defensive staff will give him a fresh start. And I got high hopes for him. But You're right. He is kind of a hole in the first round pick. You got Kincaid, Rousseau, Epinesa, and Ed Oliver, and Josh, of course, and Tremaine. All those guys have got to be considered really solid players as first round picks. Josh Allen included in that. Ed, Epinesa, Rousseau, Kincaid. That's a pretty good run of first round picks, particularly picking as low as they have in the first round.
Got to take a break here, but when we come back, we will get to more of your phone calls as we're asking you, why do you think this will be the most important Bills draft since 2018? 803-0550, open lines for you. More of your phone calls next here on One Bills Live. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. During the break, it was made official. Lyle Collins, free agent offensive tackle, last played for Cincinnati in 2022, has signed his one-year contract with the Bills over the weekend. I believe it was NFL Network's Mike Garofolo that had it first, that he had agreed to terms with Buffalo, so finally got to town, put pen to paper, deal is done, and he is signed. And we've also learned he is going to wear jersey 71 for the Bills. He wore it for Cincinnati as well. So missed most of the or all of the 2023 season due to ACL and MCL injuries to his knee. Cincinnati, once they realized he was not going to be fit to play at any point in the 2023 season, released him in mid-September last year after playing 15 games for them in 2022. So didn't play all of last year as he was rehabbing that knee injury, but is good to go now. Will turn 31 before the start of the next season, but I think this is a guy that's not only pretty much a lock to be a swing tackle, he may even push somebody like Spencer Brown for a starting job. So it'll be very interesting to see how things work in training camp coming up. This is a seven-year starter.
Yeah, it's not hard to see the upside of signing a guy like Lyle Collins. I mean, that he's got some chops in the league. And if he comes back healthy and strong, I mean, goodness gracious.
Played his first six seasons for Dallas.
Signed a second contract with Dallas.
Yeah. I mean, he started right out of the chute. He was undrafted because there was a lot of there was some stuff like reports on him and whatnot. And so he didn't get drafted. And then the Cowboys signed him as an undrafted guy. And he's in the starting lineup from the word go and hasn't looked back. So that's a heck of a talent to grab this time of year. Granted, he is coming off a knee injury with an ACL and an MCL, but obviously he passed Buffalo's physical and is good to go. So kind of an exciting acquisition, you know, low risk, high reward there. So good ad for Buffalo for sure. Topic of discussion for you today is, why do you think this is the most important Bills draft since 2018 when the Bills got their franchise quarterback, Josh Allen? Can let us know at 803-0550. Got some open lines for you. 1-888-550-2550, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. But we head back to the phones and to Butch on the east side. What's up, Butch?
First of all, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks so much for taking my call. I just want to just really be clear on something right now, that we're moving in a direction based off how Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, and his whole staff, I'm talking about the front staff along with the coaching staff, have built this franchise since they came on as a regime. This draft is one of the most important drafts, and Steve, no disrespect to your crew. Your crew was very special. But at this draft here, we're going into the money game now, where, like, we know, cash strap, Brandon Bean, like you just said about the great signing of Collins, I can see him starting at left guard. For that $6 million that he paid, I applaud Brandon Bean and him for getting this guy. But at the same time, this draft class here is very important that he strikes fire as players. And we had 11 picks. I think we got like 10 now. But at the same time, like I told you guys maybe a month ago, I'm looking to them. And Steve, you looked on your sheet to see what would it take to get the Carolina Panthers and get that 33 and 39 pick. I would trade that 28th and maybe throw in a fourth to make sure we get that 33 and 39. That means we can have 33, 39, and 60. We might not have a three, but then we'll maybe have a fifth, and maybe we can move up in the fourth round. Maybe we get a fourth round pick. But saying that, I'm very intrigued on a lot of players that's going to be pushed back, a.k.a. like the kid Lizette, the wide receiver in South Carolina. I can see him pushing back. I can see Vontaze with a situation with the DUI in Texas sliding back now. Yes, yeah, so we can work with him and maybe overcome, get him some talk to him, and maybe, you know, everybody makes – he got mud on his face right now. But at the same time, he could take a shower and wash it off and still be a hell of a player for us, a big pickup in the second round. I'm still going to stick on that. And I really believe that Brandon Bean, with the respect that he has in Carolina, and Carolina with the pressure of them not having a number one for the last 2 years, they haven't gotten the first round, I think he can swing that deal and let them have that one day. And then the second day, we can run that draft board with 3 second-round picks, or we can move up, move back, and at the same time and watch those players fall in the second round. I think the second round is key. I think if we get a lot of players, the depth that we can get off this draft to back up, because right now we do have 22 players that can start right now, 11 on offense, 11 on defense, but behind them is very, very empty. So I really believe this draft is one of the most important draft class in Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott's regime. But thank you so much for taking my call. I love you guys. I love MSG. I love WG. I love all the fans, and you guys take care. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, Butch. Yeah, it's a valid point, because I think a lot of us are consumed with, oh my gosh, how are the Bills going to fill their number one wide receiver hole? And look, I get it. It's an important role to fill. We don't know what they think about the receivers already on the roster. Maybe they think Curtis Samuel could be a capable one. We don't know. But they do have to add to that, and there's a hole there in the starting lineup. I don't know that there's a hole in the starting lineup on defense right now, because with the defensive players they've signed in free agency, whether it was re-signing or new players, they've kind of plugged all the starting positions, but depth is sorely lacking. And so, to Butch's point, if you want to get the top receiver, that's great. Hopefully you can stay put or make a small move up the board to get a player you covet that you're fearful is going to be plucked away from you right before your pick. But you don't want to do it at the expense of the draft capital you have remaining, knowing you have depth holes that you need to fill on this roster as well. So I think the depth part shouldn't be lost. I mean, the front line receiver part is more important, because that's the guy that's going to be playing 65 snaps a week for you every single week. But we see what a battle of attrition a 17-game NFL season is these days.
Right.
And if you don't have depth, you're just as sunk.
That's right. And if you start packaging, like, for instance, if you start packaging these picks, and like if you take 128 and 133, two of the picks, Bills picks they got in the fourth round, put those together, and you could move up to the 99th pick. So you'd move up virtually 20
to the bottom around three.
Yeah, 29 spots. You'd move to the bottom around three, and then you would still pick 199th, and then you would skip the fourth round, and you'd still have pick 144. And then if you took 160 and 163 bundled in together, you could all move those picks from the bottom of the fourth up to ahead of that, up to 125. So you could still get the 199, the 125, and the 144 pick in this draft, and then you'd still have 200, 204, and 248. So you'd still have 7 or 8 picks in this pick draft, and you'd get a couple of more picks higher up the scale. But you better have guys you like at those spots. Otherwise, just sit still and take a swing at more guys. The thing about this is, the intriguing part about all this is, if you have the most picks, which is what the Bills have now, they got 10 guys they're going to pick. Think about it. And on one end of the spectrum, any one of those guys, and virtually, and in fact, any bunch of those guys could end up in the Hall of Fame. That's the spectrum we're working with here. Some of them may not make it through training camp because they turn out to be stiffs and axe murderers or whatever,
and you get rid of them as soon as you meet them, these other guys turn into, you know, you got people like naming their dogs after them, right? So that's why you want 50 picks, you know, if you can get them. Because each of these guys, in their own way, brings something to the table, and any one of them could be that dude.
Yeah.
That's the fun part about this exercise. But it's also the maddening, that's one also the one where you look at a guy and he looks like Secretariat on the hoof, and he's a plow horse. He's a rented mule.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing that just drives you crazy. I still like the fact, particularly that we've been talking about this, and you know, past performance is no guarantee of future results.
Yes.
So, but Brandon Bean's been pretty good all the way through these drafts.
We have to take a break here, but Walt and Charleston, Patrick and Rochester, will get to you when we return. More of your phone calls coming up. Why do you think this will be the most important Bills draft since 2018? Your calls next here on One Bills Live. Stay with us. All right, why do you think this will be the most important Bills draft since 2018? We have our reasons, you have yours. You let us know at 803-0550. We lead off with Walt in Charleston next. What's up, Walt?
How you doing, guys?
Good.
I went online and I got a list of some of the names of the top 30 visits. This is sourced by either the player, the school, or his agent. You want me to,
we've seen the lists that are out there, Walt. But, yeah, I mean, if you want to share them, feel free.
What's interesting to you, Walt?
Yeah, what's the most interesting?
Okay, well, the one Troy Benson, running back from Florida State University, is listed. Jordan Morgan, offensive tackle from Arizona is listed. Tez Walker, receiver from University of North Carolina, is listed. Christian Boyd, defensive tackle from Northern Iowa is listed. Marshawn Dillon, defensive end from Western Michigan is listed. And on private workouts, they got Troy Franklin, wide receiver.
The reports are out there. The team will never confirm them. And that's fine. We understand why.
But this is from the player of the school, so it's got to be good, right?
I guess.
Ten Oladura, safety from Oregon State.
Yeah.
Another linebacker from Washington. I can't pronounce the name. Defanu. And they also list private workouts, combine interviews.
Yeah, we're aware of those that are out there. We totally get it, Walt. And we appreciate you.
And they're
going
to be happening
us.
Right up until the draft time too. I mean, you'll be able to. Yeah, what days those happen are kind of depend on where else the kid's got to go and who's going to be in the building and if they can get people in the building to talk to the kid when he gets here, the appropriate raft of coaches and scouts. So, there's a ton of people in and out of this building. And that at draft time, of course, all these guys coming in and out. You'd be shocked at how many guys come in and out of this building during the regular season on Tuesdays. They're working guys out.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's a common practice, and the reason Brandon and I brought it up at the top of the show because we passed by one of the guys.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, man. I totally blotted out the sun like the eclipse. He's one of those guys you want on your side walking down the dark alley. He is the dark alley, that guy. He was huge. So
I don't know if he was that big.
It caught
I remember
Brownie
walking by
guard.
Linval Joseph in the hall here last year. That's the biggest human I've seen since Sid Washington.
Yeah, you got to walk way around Linval when he comes through. So yeah, all these guys. It is a busy, busy time of year here at One Bills Drive. Despite the fact they don't have any practices, and we tend to guys are in town already getting ready for the OTAs next week. Next week. Bunch of guys in the weight room today working out. It was like old home week. You know, those guys saying hello to each other. It's been a minute. You know. It's good to get them back, and so things are starting to rev up again.
Didn't take long. We are going to step aside here because when we come back, we're going to be joined by ESPN NFL draft analyst Jordan Reed. He's got his draft rankings, final draft rankings, coming out a week from tomorrow. And then he's got a 7-round mock draft monster that's going to be released the Monday before the draft. He also has some of his best team fits for the Bills. We'll let you know who that is when we return with Jordan Reed here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, welcome to hour number two on a Tuesday. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Pleased to be joined now by ESPN NFL draft and college football analyst Jordan Reed joining us here, who's going to have a 7-round mock monster coming out the week of the draft. So in just a little under 2 weeks' time, and he's also got his final draft rankings coming out a week from tomorrow, top to bottom. Talk about a chore, but he has undertaken it willingly. Jordan, good to have you. I want to lead off with a two-part question. Part one, the record for number of receivers taken in round one is 7. Do you feel there are 7 or even more wide receivers in this class that for the vast majority of teams will earn first-round grades?
Yeah, that's been the big discussion about this year's draft class, not only offensive tackles, but wide receivers. Those are really your two groups that are the strongest in this year's class. And you're right, 7 was the record set a few years ago in the first round, of where this group definitely has an opportunity to challenge that feat. I feel good about 6 going in the first round right now. Marvin Harrison Jr. of Ohio State, Malik Nabers of LSU, Romo Dunze of Washington are really in that first tier. The second tier gets really interesting with Brian Thomas Jr., Adonai Mitchell. But that sixth guy, there's so many different players that could go there as far as that sixth wide receiver. Some teams like Xavier Worthy of Texas. Another is Ladd McConkey of Georgia. And then also you can throw in Keon Coleman of Florida State. There's a lot of teams that like him out there as well. So I feel good about 6 going in the first round right now, potentially 7, which would tie the record.
Yeah, and the Bills sitting at 28, we chew this up all day, every day. And Brandon Bean has never been shy about bumping up in drafts. He does it more often than not. He trades up a couple of spots at least to do it. What do you think the odds are if the Bills do have a first-round grade on a bunch of guys, they could trade back into the early second and still get a guy they like and stockpile some picks? But that doesn't seem to be the way the Bills operate. Even if they feel like they could get it done, it's more likely they jump up a couple of spots.
I think this is the big debate as far as what they're going to do. And when the Stephon Diggs trade first happened, I immediately thought that they probably were going to try to trade up in order to get one of these wide receivers, especially in the first tier, whether it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or Odunze or Nabers. But it would take a Julio Jones type of trade in order to get up into that spot. And I just don't really see Brandon Bean doing that, just because it's such a deep wide receiver class. And then you also have to remember, I think more teams are gravitating towards what we've seen in previous years with the Green Bay Packers and the Pittsburgh Steelers, are really waiting until day two in order to get the wide receivers that they're choosing. And you have a superstar quarterback like Josh Allen, of where he can really uplift and grow with that young core of receivers as the season goes along. So opposed to trading up, I would not be surprised if the Bills end up trading back and double dipping on day two with wide receivers.
Yeah, and maybe what lends at least some credence to that move would be the fact that right now they do not have a 3. They have 1 second-round pick at 60, And that's it for day two. So if you want to go with the volume approach, you got to move back to get more volume.
Yeah, you do. And I think Brandon Bean probably wants to recoup that third round pick just because we all know that he likes all of his draft choices. But he has been aggressive in the past. But I really would be surprised if they do trade up, especially with this being a strong wide receiver group. And like I said a little bit earlier, I would not be shocked if he tries to trade back and double dips at wide receiver once he recoups a third or even getting an extra fourth round pick.
So you've got in one of your articles as well a great fit for the Buffalo Bills, and whether he's there or not is A.D. Mitchell. He seems to be a guy that would fit what the Bills are looking for, a guy that can play on the boundary, that kind of thing. What are your thoughts, and why do you think he's such a good fit?
Well, when you're putting these wide receiver groups together, these wide receiver corps together, you're kind of envisioning what don't they have on the group currently. And I think A.D. Mitchell definitely is that type that they don't have, that long, rangy receiver at about 6'2", 205 pounds. He runs 4.33 at the combine, which was much faster than a lot of people were guessing that he would run. But it shows up on tape with him. He's able to stretch the field vertically, but also he's really good in the short to intermediate areas as well. But one of my favorite stats about A.D. Mitchell is that 82% of his catches last year either went for a first down or a touchdown. Last time I checked, that's pretty good for a wide receiver if he's catching first downs and touchdowns all the time. So I definitely think he could be an asset in Buffalo's wide receiver group.
Yeah, I mean, he had a touchdown every five receptions. He had 11 touchdowns, 55 catches. I like that ratio a whole heck of a lot. One guy that we've kind of looked at and found intriguing and thought based on some of his testing numbers could potentially threaten to climb into the bottom of round one is Xavier Leggett. I realize there's only 1 year of production there. Took a long time for him to get on the field. Finally played with a good quarterback in Rattler last year and put up a monster season and is as physical as they come at 221. And I've told Steve this on the air. I'm watching tape of this guy, and a 221-pound dude is running away from DBs that look like track athletes for touchdowns. It's hard not to be impressed by him. Could you see him creeping into the bottom of round one? Is there enough momentum for him?
Yeah, I can see it. And he's a little bit of a polarizing prospect. There's some teams that feel as if he's more of a mid to late day two prospect, while there are some others that feel as if he's a late first or early second round pick. And I was at the pro day for South Carolina. He looked really good. There was all 32 teams there for him. So there's plenty of interest in Xavier Leggett. But once again, it goes back to how comfortable are you with the late breakout of him, and why wasn't the production there the first four seasons when he was there at South Carolina? So what took so long for him to break out? Now, there were a lot of variables attached to that. He had some really good players that were on the depth chart ahead of him during his first few years at South Carolina. And there were some other things that happened during his time there. But his last season there, he was absolutely terrific. And you hit the nail on the head as far as his breakaway speed, how strong he is at the catch point. He's a wide receiver in a running back's body. Every bit of 6'1", 225 pounds, which is what he came in at the combine. And then running in the high 4.3s, that shows up consistently on tape with him.
And he just seems to be in that fringe group with Troy Franklin, Ladd McConkey, A.D. Mitchell, although A.D. Mitchell's probably at the front of that. But once you get outside of Brian Thomas Jr. and those top three guys, Adunze, Neighbors, and Harrison, then it starts to become – opinion starts to matter, right? Because you can talk up or talk down about all of these guys. Shake out what happens after those – after Brian Thomas Jr. with A.D. Mitchell, Ladd McConkey, Troy Franklin – you know, Leggett, Keon Coleman, and all the way down, even Roman Wilson, even down there, who, you know, coming out of Michigan. So they got all these guys that, you know, that we always talk about these tiers. This guy's is, you know, it's hard to discern those top three guys, but those are real the question marks about how they're going to get drafted by somebody and where and who's going to be available for somebody who really likes them. That's where you start seeing teams trade up, trade down to get the guy they like out of that group.
Now you're just differentiating which type of receiver that you want. I think Coleman and Leggett are very similar stylistically. You're strong, boundary X type of receivers that can make those tough, hard-nosed catches. They don't have any problems with doing the dirty work. And even though neither one of them are going to be like your consistent separators that generate a whole bunch of separation in the route stems, there's a lot of different things that they like to do on that boundary that a lot of other wide receivers are not capable of doing in this draft class. And then you get to that other tier of where your elite separators, whether it's your Ladd McConkey, your Javon Baker, even Troy Franklin in a sense, even though he's not as physical as those other guys, but they're definitely in a similar type of tier. Those upper echelon type of route runners that are able to generate that separation with ease in and out of their breaks. They're very good at the catch point too. So it really just depends on what type of wide receiver that they're looking for. Are they looking for those big, strong type of receivers that don't mind doing the dirty work? Or are they looking more so for those natural separators that have really good hands to complement?
How wild are you expecting the top 10 to be? Because I think a lot of people are of the belief that it's going to go quarterbacks 1, 2, 3. Some are even already proposing 1, 2, 3, 4, that somebody's going to move into that four spot with Arizona. Is Arizona really the first major pivot point here, or is it the Bears at 9? Where do you kind of see some pivot points here in the top 10 that can kind of turn the draft upside down in a hurry?
I think it's that 3 through 5 range and starting with New England. And I still think they're going to select a quarterback, but I would be remiss if I said they haven't went back and forth on that decision as far as do they feel like they have the infrastructure in place to bring in a rookie quarterback. And they don't want to destroy another quarterback like what they did with Mac Jones, not having the adequate personnel and surroundings for him to succeed after having a successful rookie season. So do they want to welcome in another quarterback, whether it's Jaden Daniels, Drake May, or even J.J. McCarthy at that number 3 overall pick? Or do they end up trading back with the team looking to trade up, whether it's the Vikings at 11, the Broncos at 12, or even the Raiders at 13? There's so many different ways that they could go with that third pick. Arizona's in a similar circumstance. We know general manager Monty Osifort likes to move around, whether it's move up or move back. He did both of those last year during his first draft as GM of the Cardinals and then also the Chargers at 5. That's a very common slot of where a QB needy team like the Minnesota Vikings, the Broncos, or the Raiders, who I talked about a little bit earlier, where they could look to trade up to get that quarterback of the future.
So if the Patriots do trade out of that number 3, go back to number 9 where Chicago is or what have you, they're still going to get a shot probably at guys like Mike Penix, J.J. McCarthy, or Bo Nix, Spencer Rattler, some of these other names a little further down the list. And what is the next name? I mean, you know Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, Drake May, and J.J. McCarthy's been tossed around up there. What are some of the names that you feel teams are intrigued by, maybe have an upside that they haven't experienced yet?
Nixon, Penix would be the next two guys in that next bucket or that next tier, just because there's a lot of variables attached to both of those guys, older prospects that really had to reinvent themselves at their second stop. Bo Nix going from Auburn to Oregon, and then Michael Penix going from Indiana to Washington. They have a very similar career arc. Now it's just a matter of how comfortable are you with the other traits that matter as far as what is in their negatives column. With Penix, he has a huge or a long list of injuries. He had 4 season-ending injuries in as many seasons during his time in Indiana, but his resume has been clean from a durability standpoint ever since he got to Washington, started 28 career games, did not suffer any type of injuries. With Bo Nix, it's just a matter of how much left is there to uncover with this potential. Him starting 61 career games in college, that is a lengthy list of starts, the most in FBS history for a starting quarterback. So it's just a matter of, has he bumped his head on the ceiling of what he can be, or do you feel as if there's more left to uncover with his development?
Jordan, we know you're tight on time, especially with some final draft rankings coming out next week. So thanks for giving us some of yours. We're going to cut you loose here, but hopefully we can catch up with you a little bit later on in the offseason. Thanks much for the time.
Thank you, guys, as always. It's always a pleasure.
All right, thanks, that's Jordan Reed, ESPN NFL draft and college football analyst. Got his final draft rankings coming out a week from tomorrow. That's like top to bottom, like 350 players.
I'll say
and
this.
Then he's got his 7-round mock draft coming out the Tuesday before the draft.
I told him before he came on, he's a goner, man, going through 7 rounds trying to pick 250 guys.
I'm sure that wasn't his choice. Oof. I'm sure his editor is like, hey, you want to put a 7-rounder together for me? Yeah, no. Thanks. Give it to me in 2 weeks.
Right. what he said there at the end about the quarterback, Bo Nix, is a quintessential draft dilemma for a team. And so is Michael Penix as well. So Michael Penix is a long time, he played a lot of football in college and got hurt a lot early on at another school. Then he goes to his second stop in Washington, and they protect him a little better, and the guy lights it up, in my opinion.
yeah, he's got some miles on his chassis. He's been through a few car wrecks. But, man, oh, man, the guy can really play. He's got a big engine, you know. So, and Bo Nix, same thing. He's been in college for a long time. Like, he's in college as long as a doctor goes to college, right? I mean, the guy's been in there 6 years. And coming out finally, what more is there to learn about it? You know, is he continuing to get better or has he plateaued? These are all the questions you got to ask. I'll say this, though. A guy like Penix, who's a lefty, is really intriguing to me because of the way he plays when he's on the field. The guy plays, he's got a live arm. He's got a pro arm. He's got poise in the pocket. I played at a big-time level in Washington. For 28 games now, he hasn't had even a scratch. So I think he did everything he could to lay the injury questions to rest. And I think going to a new program says more about the old program than staying healthy says more about the old program that he was in rather than him not being able to stay healthy.
Or maybe he's just lucky.
Right.
Maybe his luck changed.
I think it's really intriguing. I think there's going to be – You know, I don't know. I just think there's going to be as many quarterbacks taken in this first round as there are wide receivers. If there's six or seven of each, you know, I think it's going to be a very close race between those two positions and offensive tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, there may be 20 guys taken at those three positions.
Yeah. Offensive tackle is deep. Wide receiver is deep. And
quarterback
That's going to be – yes, at the top it is. It's going to be reflected in round one to a great degree, and it may change the minds of some teams down in the bottom of round one where you have the run, you know, at a position you were hoping would get to you and it doesn't. Now it's time to pivot and choose a different course of action or employ one of the contingency plans that you put together, you know, for the draft this year. You don't go in with one plan. You simply cannot. There are far too many variables. There are far too many. The differences of opinion on prospects alone is enough to mandate that you as a personnel department have a multitude of contingency plans ready to employ at the drop of a hat. Because all you need, and here's the thing, you're picking 28. Those 27 teams in front of you today aren't going to be the same 27 teams in front of you when you get to draft night.
That's the thing, too. Because
and it's going to change live on the fly.
And that's why all these teams in round one particular, because these are such huge draft picks, these first round, even the ones down 28, 29, 30 where the Bills are picking, those draft picks are so important to every franchise. And so they use all 15 minutes of their time. You're thinking, well, you had all this time to plan because everything has gone haywire in front of them. Now they got to call their contingency plan saying, hey, listen, are you still alive? You know,
Breathing?
Yeah. Are you in jail?
You healthy? They ask him that as soon as they call him.
Yeah.
Are you healthy?
Are you healthy? Did you hurt yourself lately? All of that stuff goes into this. And so they're calling that and they're calling the kid's agent. They're touching base with anybody they've had who said they might want to trade into your spot. You got to touch base with them. And this all happens in 15 minutes. You got eight phones going and they're all making the same different phone calls about this pick. About is he healthy? Do you guys want to trade up? Do you guys want to trade up? Do you guys want to trade up? Does anybody want to trade up? Hey, you said you're going to give us this for that guy, whatever. And you, are you okay? Yeah, you know. It's absolutely crazy on draft night. Crazy. And I'm telling you, we're going to do a bracket for this first round. We need to. You and I need to. I'm telling you, I think there's going to be as many quarterbacks in this first round as there are wideouts. Okay. Maybe not wideouts. Offensive tackles, wideouts, and quarterbacks will make up 20 picks in this draft, first round.
Okay.
20. I'm going to put that on a whiteboard.
Tackles, quarterbacks,
offensive
receivers?
Tackles, quarterbacks, and wide receivers. 20 guys.
I don't think it's going to be that high.
All right, you take the under.
I'm going to take the under on that.
All right.
I think you're going to, at most, you're going to have seven tackles. At most, you're going to have seven receivers. You're not going to get six quarterbacks
we'll see.
In round one.
All right.
I don't think so.
All right.
I'll take the under.
It's going to be close.
I think it could be close, but that it's a little high. It's a little high for me. You go 18 and a half, you might have me. I'd be right on the number. Be a push.
30-second pick will be a tackle.
Let's get back to the phones, though, and to John in Indiana. What's up, John?
Hey, Chris and Steve. I had a comment about the Diggs trade. Last season, mid-season, halfway through, I started to wonder why Diggs was coming out a lot in third downs and goal line situations. Seemingly some crucial downs, he was coming out, and I guess he was pulling himself out of the game. I thought initially it was a sports science thing, how many snaps. I think somebody called the show, and it was said that he was taking himself out.
Yeah.
And then you look at, I just saw a stat on Facebook yesterday, and maybe you can fact check this, but said that Khalil Shakir had more yards on half the targets that Diggs had over the last 10 games of the season. So I kind of feel like Diggs knew that, you know, he, at some point he in his head, he said, next season I'm somewhere else. And maybe he wanted to preserve his you know, capital and his stock.
Yeah, I mean, I understand where you're coming from, John, and we're all going to speculate on what prompted this move, especially 3.5 weeks before the draft. I don't know that we'll ever get to the bottom of the full reasons why it took place. But some of what you stated is completely correct. I mean, Khalil Shakir was a more sure-handed and more productive receiver over the final 10 games of the season than Diggs. Maybe not the final 10. I'd have to look at that, the number
that
of games.
That was a brownie stat.
I had brought that up near the end of the season. I can't remember how many games it was, but that was pure fact. Yes, he did take himself off the field for some games, particularly games where the Bills were running the ball more than they had been in the first half of the season under Ken Dorsey when Joe Brady took over as offensive coordinator. And I think he felt that was something that didn't work well with him either. Maybe he felt like, why am I going to run all these routes if we're not even going to throw the football? I don't know. I can't crawl into his head and know exactly what he was thinking, but for whatever reason, the decision was made. He's no longer on the roster, and the Bills are moving forward.
Yeah, and I taking himself out on third down was it happened more than once.
Peculiar,
but there was also some times when it probably was a personnel thing, and it probably wasn't the same reason
every
100% of the time. And I doubt, knowing what I know about Steph Diggs and the atmosphere and all that, that he was saving himself. I think it would probably be – I think it would be – there'd be another reason. Either he ran two go routes in a row or whatever and didn't have the gas left in the tank or something like that. I think it's multiple reasons. But even if Steph Diggs' critics would say there's no – I don't think there's anybody who can rationally say Steph Diggs was saving himself for his next team – by taking himself out on third down in 2023. That's a little bit that's a couple of steps too far for me.
Let's go to Brian all the way out in Hawaii. What's up, Brian?
Aloha.
Aloha.
So I've been listening to you guys for quite a long time, and you know, back here in Hawaii, it's 8:30 in the morning here. You guys start about 6 or 7, so don't always get hold of you guys. However, Tom, I listened to your show a long time. Couple things. So, if you could pick Eric Moulds with the 28th pick in this year's draft, would that be a win? What I'm getting at here is there's plenty of receivers at the end of the draft to be taken. Number two is I can't believe you guys haven't brought up Marv Levy's best saying when asked about the draft, and he would always say something similar to, well, I'm excited about last year's guys, which brings me to Justin Shorter and Gabe Davis. You know, I remember Gabe Davis being drafted, what, fourth round,
yep.
I think, way back. You know, and if you look at his draft profile back then, you know, it said that he would eventually be an average starter. Justin Shorter actually has a little bit higher prospect grade, but also an average starter. The difference is that Shorter is just a little bit taller. They basically run the same 40, and he's a little bit heavier. But I think Brandon already got his guy replacement for Gabe Davis, and I think they go a different direction if they stay at 28. That's all I got. What do you guys think?
All right.
Yeah, that's certainly a possibility. If they get to 28 and enough guys are off the board or not enough guys are off the board or whatever, what have you, yeah, they could always go a different direction because they may have a player there at another position that even we didn't think was going to be there.
That's a lot of eggs to put in one basket, though. I will say that.
And I'll say that, yeah, Justin Shorter may be their guy, but I also think they've, you know, with Curtis Samuel, with Justin Shorter, Mac Hollins, there's going to be some competition out there. And Andy Isabella and KJ Hamler are on the roster, too. So they've got some speed and they've got some size already here. But let's face it, we don't know about Justin Shorter. I mean, you can say what you want, and the Bills, maybe they traded Steph Diggs feeling more confident about the guys they've got now in the room than they thought they were going to feel at this point. Maybe they feel comfortable with it, and they're pump-faking all of us.
I'm not sure what evidence that's based on. Well, I mean, Shorter couldn't even practice with the team when he was on IR last year.
Right. They may,
the very end of the season.
Yeah, they may think they know something about Justin Shorter or the other guys on the roster that nobody else does, and they're gonna go with those instincts, and they say, listen, I think we're going to be fine. That may be it. But you go down the list of players on their roster, and it's, you know, it's without Steph Diggs in that room, it's different.
Yep.
It's very different. There was the Terrell Shavers is also in that room.
Brian Thompson,
6'4", 211. Brian Thompson, 6'1", 195. All these guys have been in the building rattling around in there, and we'll see if they can come up. And that's, you know, I think that's a lot of eggs in a basket. Me and Brownie know nothing about. And the coaches and the scout and the players and all that, they know a lot about these guys. They know what kind of guy they maybe they haven't seen him play too much, certainly not in games, but they'll have a real feel for what kind of guy they are, and that goes a long way. Maybe it does have something, maybe there is something in all of that stuff, all this, the bottom of the roster, these practice squad guys that were hanging around last year, maybe there is something in there that we don't know about that they think they do. If they don't pick a wide receiver at 28 or 60, that's the only explanation I can think of.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, Shorter, you know, I understand his pedigree. He was the number one high school prospect coming out of high school. Went to Penn State, couldn't get on the field because of the guys in front of him, one of whom was KJ Hamler, interestingly enough. And he transfers to Florida and finishes his career there. And we just don't know because we haven't, outside of training camp, we didn't see him on a field with this roster because he had the injury and went on IR and basically missed, you know, his entire rookie season turned into a redshirt year. I mean, we passed by him in the weight room the other day, and, I mean, that guy is rocked up. Does it mean he can play great receiver at the NFL level? We don't know.
Right.
We got to wait and see. And I think because the Bills have to wait and see also – much like you have contingency plans for how the draft is going to fall, you also have to have contingency plans for players who you think can be this on your roster. You need backup plans, and I think they will find some in this draft class. I mean, Steve has said many times, the Bills are in an arms race in the AFC. You can't have enough receivers on your roster, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You need weapons for your A1 quarterback, who's one of the best in the league. And if you sell yourself short in that category, you're doing a disservice to your offense.
You have to score at close to, if not at, 30 points a game on average.
To be in the top tier of this league, yes.
You gotta be there. That's, you can do the math, that's like 4 touchdowns plus. And you gotta do it every week. Now you can win games 14-10, yeah, but you also gotta win 42-17 sometimes. You've got to score. You got to do it a ton, and that takes bodies. Takes an offensive line, takes a quarterback, of course, and then it takes all these other athletes around you, and you got to be humming. And it takes an offensive coordinator, and it's all of that stuff. There's a lot in it, but it better players make you better. And that's what you're trying to do with this draft. And I don't the one thing we've harped on all the way through this offseason that's a little different than other offseasons is that we don't know exactly what the Bills coaching staff and the scouts and Brandon Bean think about their own guys. That more so than ever this year, that's a real problem. That's a real problem for us to evaluate where they're going to head in this draft, I think.
Break time for us here. We're continuing to take your calls on why you think this will be the most important Bills draft since 2018. Hit us up on the tweet sheet if you wish as well. If we have a little time, we might even do a little NFL true false here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, back here on One Bills Live, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and putting it out there to you, why do you think this is the most important Bills draft since 2018, when they obviously got Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds, two huge building blocks for the offense and the defense, quite frankly, going forward and kind of propel them into a playoff contender after that. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The number to get on board if you want to chime in on that. Or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. Back to the phones we go. Into Jack in Cheektowaga. What's up, Jack?
Hi. I know that Steve probably has available to him some variation of the old Jimmy Johnson draft chart. And I am just wondering, if we were to trade back, if somebody wanted our 28, what could we get? Can we get a second and a third, and what would the range be on those? And is there a team that would be likely, you know, in that range to, you know, to make a trade with the Bills?
Yeah, you could almost get, you could certainly get two threes if you wanted, easily. If you traded 28, you could go all the way back to even late second round and still get two threes. You could get two and two threes in this draft if you traded 28.
Yeah, depending on who's interested.
Depending
on who's
interested.
Yeah, it
depends on where the level is. You could get the third round picks are worth between 35 and 78, and the 28th pick is 209. So if you get to the top of the third, you could get two of those. You could get 65 and 69, let's say, and plus it'd be three thirds basically for a 28th pick, three third round picks this year, for a 28 number 28 pick. So it's worth a lot, but the picks ahead of the 28th pick, you could get, you know, it goes up steep. If you gave the 28 and the 60th pick, you're only going to get to 16 or 17 from the 28th spot. So that's how expensive it gets once you move up. Moving up is expensive. You can certainly grab a lot of picks if you're ready to move down, like I just said. So the 28th pick would be worth three threes, about, depending on what level they're at.
Yeah, how high or low they are in the round.
A two and two threes. One, two, and two threes, if they're the right spot in the draft.
Yeah. Let's crack open the tweet sheet, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills. Why do you think this will be the most important Bills draft since 2018? Andrew says, reason why this draft is so important, there are a lot of holes that need to be filled that won't cost an arm and a leg, and you can get that through the draft. Yes. I think depth is kind of what's going to be important by the time they, chiefly when they get to day three, where 8 of their 10 picks currently reside.
Right.
I don't know if we believe all of them will be there by the time we get to day three, but the bulk of the draft capital they have is on day three, and it's going to be needed to fill depth on this roster. We had one of our callers earlier in the show say, hey, look, I can see my way to 11 starters on offense and defense right now with how the roster is currently constituted, but depth behind it is precariously thin. So day three is going to mean a lot. And that's another reason why it's important. You can talk all you want about a number one receiver and landing one in the draft, but the vast majority of these picks are going to represent important depth for this roster right. going forward.
Yeah, they've got to get bodies in the door. And I'll say this, too. I think Brandon Bean has really earned his stripes. Certainly he's got some gotten these high picks and stuff, but the quality of the guys he's been able to draft throughout the levels of this draft, I think, is really where he has distinguished himself. Certainly his trade acumen and going up and getting trading up and trading down and getting the right guy and making the right call has been great. But you go down through the list, and Brownie has done it a number of times. You go down through the long list of guys he's drafted in the 5th, 6th, and 7th round, there's a ton of guys hanging around the league for a long time. That's not easy to do. That's the difference in some GMs. Some guys, half their draft class is out of the league in 2 years. Bean seems to have the knack for picking NFL players. Now, they can't always hang on to him because there ain't enough room.
Particularly, they've had a veteran roster the last 2 or 3 years.
Particularly where their roster has been with Josh and all these jokers that they're signing. They have not had the room for these guys. This year, they're going to have some room. They're going to have some room. So 10 picks is like, okay, might want to take all of them. Because Brandon Bean has shown his best qualities is getting NFL players late in drafts. Not that they're all pros or anything, but guys who are solid starters who there's no huge drop-off if you do have to plug them in. And guys who have sustained, you know, Bob Foster is a great example.
Yeah, Robert Foster.
You know, Levi Wallace, great example.
Those guys were undrafted.
Those were undrafted guys. So they have a way of evaluating that gives them an insight as to guys that can hang around at least, be valuable.
Dane Jackson, DeMar Hamlin.
So that having 10 picks, this may be the crew that you want to have those 10 picks this year, even if they use all of them. So, and that also should give you some confidence that guys like Terrell Shavers and these guys might do something if they get a chance.
Yeah. John on the tweet sheet says, because we need to restore depth after the thinning out that was done for cap reasons, and we have acute needs to fill at wide receiver and safety. Yeah, safety is a sneaky need, but again, it's depth. I mean, they've done a good job of fortifying the perceived starting roles, you know, with Mike Edwards and Taylor Rapp. And, you know, you have Cam Lewis for some depth as well as DeMar Hamlin. But Mike Edwards signed a one-year contract. You're going to want some youth in the pipeline there that could project into starting caliber safety in a year or two because you don't know what the future holds there. And that's just one small example. There are others, too. Like, we've talked about this. Brandon Bean told us Matt Milano probably not back on the practice field until after training camp starts at the earliest, coming off of his season-ending injury last year. Well, how might that change the dynamic of the depth you have at linebacker when Dorian Williams is no longer your backup and maybe he's in the starting lineup because Milano's not on the field yet? You better have depth behind him now. So that becomes another position where they could use some depth there. I mean, let's not forget, Tyrell Dotson's out the door also. So you've lost some depth at that position.
Yeah, and they brought in Nick Morrow, who's he's a guy, just what Brownie said, nothing's going to surprise a player like Nick Morrow, who they brought in as a free agent, is whatever you call it, he's a veteran player, long in the tooth. Nothing's going to surprise him. Any moment you pick to put a guy like that on the field, he's going to be fine. You're going to go out there and he's going to know what to do and he's going to do it well. He may be athletically past his prime, but the guy is A.J. Klein is who he is. He's going to make sure everybody's in the right spot and he's going to do what he can. He may not make an over-the-top athletic play, but he's going to make sure everybody else is where they're supposed to be and this defense ain't going to get beat because of mistake.
Yeah.
You got some depth there. But like you've seen with, you know, Bernard and Milano and the like, Dorian Williams, they want athletes out there. They want some jokers who can really go, and all three of those guys can really go. So bringing a guy in like Nick Morrow gives them some depth, but they athletes are where it's at every position, and they want to have as many as they can get.
Greg on the tweet sheet says, easy, lack of talent with skill positions, depth and capital for high-end talent. We cannot even trade for a guy unless the other team eats cash. We have to get lean and mean. That starts with the draft, and we must hit on three starters and probably two more role players without a third-round pick. So he obviously sees that as a challenge.
We went around that. You're right. They don't have a third-round pick, but they got a ton of guys, a ton of picks anyway.
Yeah, they could parlay that into a three at some point.
And we've talked about being able to trade up or down or sideways or trade this pick for a bunch of picks. And with this with the draft value chart, you understand one thing. This, and the one that most people use is the Rich Hill points kind of draft
value
chart.
More GMs are using that value chart nowadays.
What it seems like when you see this is it's expensive to move up. And one of the callers just a minute ago asked us, what would it take? What could we get if we trade the 28 pick? We could get a 2 and 2 threes. But here's the thing. If somebody's going to give up 3 draft picks in this draft, who's going to be available at number 28 that we don't want?
Right. That's why it's so hard to pry people out of those spots.
You can't get them out, man. It's hard. They just if there's a guy at 28 that another team is willing to give up a second and 2 third rounders for, how good is that joker going to have to be not to have you saying, yeah, you know what, we're going to take him. I don't care what position he is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where this draft value chart is, and that's why it's kind of why it's so universally accepted. You got to really want a dude. You got to have some conviction about the guy you're trading up to get, or you're just throwing away picks. You may as well flush them.
Yeah. David on the tweet sheet says, 100% nailed what so many Bills fans feel. Get too early. 2 wide receivers in the first 2 rounds preferably, but 2 in the first 3 rounds at minimum. Again, no third round pick. Enough of not maximizing Josh's arm. Let the ball fly. Prefer they move up in the second round also, rather than all the talk of moving up in the first round. So that's how he's trying to get the third round pick. Move back into the top of round 2, pick up a 3, and then just draft receivers till the cows come home.
Yeah. And that makes sense. You can do that. If you, like we said, you get a lot of picks for trading out of the first round. If you take trade out and then take your pick wherever at the in anywhere from 40 through 60, and take a receiver then, and then another one at 60, you're going to get some really good players. There's no question about it. They're going to be really good players in the top 3 rounds of this draft, like there always are. But the closer you get to the bottom of that group, the more questions are going to be about whether the guy can actually play.
And play right away, because they will need help sooner rather than later from the youth on this roster. Break time for us. Final thoughts on the tweet sheet next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, some final thoughts here on the tweet sheet on One Bills Live on why this is the most important Bills draft since 2018. Steve is trying to construct a 3-team trade. He's making my head hurt.
Yeah, because if you Bills trade out of 28 and they go, say, to Washington, say, give us the 40th pick of the draft and the 67th pick of the draft, that will give the Buffalo right at what it's worth. 129. Yeah. Buffalo would get a little extra. Buffalo would throw in maybe like a 144 pick or whatever. But Washington could give Buffalo the 40th pick and the 36th pick, maybe.
See how hard this is?
Yeah.
It's
yeah. It's all right.
It's convoluted.
I got to stop right
now. It's convoluted. You got to write it down.
We got to go through this. As I figure, if you could get a third team in to throw in a pick and then evens it out, and you can throw in a play. Yeah, it's
don't do it. It's too hard.
Bill Polian did it once with Cornelius Bennett.
Once,
and it changed the course of 3 franchises.
Yeah,
and we
some for the better.
Let's go.
Eric on the tweet sheet says because it's important this draft because they need to retool the team to make the roster set for a bunch of Super Bowl pushes. We have a new OC and a newer DC with different philosophies from most of the drafts in the Bean era. Constructing it to fit what each wants and needs. Add to the new guard of Allen, Kincaid, Cook, Bernard, Ed, and Benford. It is a new age.
It's not
it's
how
a new
you
time.
Listen, your coordinators, you don't build a roster around your coordinators. The coordinators build their offense and defense around the players you get.
Yeah.
You get the best players you can, they build it around them. They'll change their philosophies if not.
There is consultation though between what players would
absolutely
fit. But from
absolutely
what we have heard, Brady tells the personnel people, "Hey, get me a football player, we'll make it work."
Right.
That's it for us today. More undoubtedly on the draft tomorrow here on One Bills Live. We'll see you at 1:00.